The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
Ryan Pills,
Jonah Dew,
and Apprentice Dan
in the house.
Okay, first off, I can't believe that today is the last day of August. I don't know what happened to the entire summer. That was crazy. I just blew Jonah's mind because I time traveled there for a second. But man, last Monday of the month, we've got our monthly game night coming up. We're doing those again, which is exciting. We haven't actually done it in real life yet, but I'm sure it will have been fantastic and we'll have had a great turnout and lots of fun playing games. Tonight, we played a couple of games. We also did some Kickstarter backer reward shipping. Props to Sarah and Melissa for dedicating themselves to not playing games, but to packaging up t-shirts and labeling them. Good job.
Yep. Over 100 shirts just shipped out.
Woo. How are we looking on other backer rewards?
Most of the promos where we have your entire order, they have been shipped. We probably have about 30 more to do.
Boom. Very cool.
And we're just waiting on more promos from publishers.
Yeah, that's going to take a little while because they're going to be just trickling in over the next like 6 to 8 to 10 months.
Right. So we have like 500 Letter Jam tokens ready to go. But until everybody else's backer rewards are in, we got to hold on to them and store them. In my
probably the one that's going to take the longest is the Kevin's Head miniature one.
Oh, because the mythic mini?
Hell Last Saga, because that one is going to be shipped with the game, which isn't going to be June 2021.
Okay, so be patient, everybody. It'll be worth it to get Kevin's Head on a stake.
That's right.
Well, the rest of us got to play a bunch of games. I think, did you guys get to play one? Not even one?
No.
Well, I saw Melissa playing a game. At least Melissa did, right?
It's one I can't talk about.
Oh, no!
Because it's super secret.
but next podcast, we will talk about
ooh,
it.
Ooh, okay, cool.
So, it's from one of our sponsors.
Ooh, narrowing it down. Anybody guesses out there?
Bam, guess in your heads.
So okay, Kevin at least played a game tonight. What did you play, Kevin?
Oh, Jonah and I played a game of Truffle Shuffle from AEG.
Oh.
We sure did.
And it is a Seven Wonders-like game. It's a you can play 2, 3, or 4, but it's like Seven Wonders if you think about the
like
grid.
Duel
of,
or
Seven
like
Seven Wonders Duel.
Sorry,
duel.
Thank yeah, you. Seven
okay.
Wonders
so
Duel.
That's kind of what it looked like on the table.
Seven Wonders Duel. Jonah, go for it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was. It had like the scoring was like poker rules, so you could get a straight or a flush or a royal straight or a all twos.
Full house.
Full house. Yeah, full, yeah. Yeah, and then it was basically, you know, back and forth. We play two. You can play 2 to 4. So kind of just back and forth, taking cards out of the tableau and then trying to score them based on what you could take and what you could put together and combo. So,
and was it delicious?
There, unfortunately, the cards were chocolate, but there were truffle shuffle. There were truffles, I'm sorry. But there were no
actual
truffles
chocolate
in the box. I looked.
You we might
except
have missed
those. Maybe a few nights ago, there was a delivery of actual truffles.
You see how they treat me.
Welcome to the house.
What happened to the other extra truffle shuffles we were saving for Jonah?
I have no idea. I don't recall what happened.
I don't know anything about that.
The two extra ones that were
the
left.
The two extra ones may have been
Sarah
eaten while I was packaging all of the Kickstarter orders.
Yeah, so the box is definitely a smaller type box and fits well. Just a bunch of cards and then tokens for money. So Jonah killed me by, I don't know, 10,
six or eight points.
So
not a lot.
Yeah, and the quality looks good. The cards are fun. You can do different things other than just taking cards. You can play these cards that let you take two or skip, and then you have to take three on your next turn. So, yeah, fun little light little game. We'll probably do a Saturday morning board game show off of it.
We did. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that it's the same designers that did Point Salad.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it fit right in that line. Yep, definitely.
While you guys were playing that one, myself and Amy and Katie, maybe, or Valerie, played Mia London, which is from Scorpion Mask, or Masqua. It's a subsidiary of Yellow. We're going to go with that. Don't know how to pronounce it. It's got an interesting mechanic or a component to it. The game, it's a real simple, light, small box game as well. You play with a, like, flip book. Is that what you call it? Like, where the top half of the book shows the guy's hat, and the middle shows his glasses, and then his teeth, and then the bottom one shows, like, his bow tie. And in the game, it's a deduction game. You have a deck of cards, or you have four decks of cards, one for each of those things. And all you do in the game, very, very simple, harder than I thought it would be, is you just flip over four hat cards, and then flip over four more hat cards, and four more hat cards, and then that's it. And then you have to remember from that quick flip, which notice, you have to notice which was the missing element. And so all the cards are in there twice, except for one. And so you've got to be like looking to see all the matches. And then as soon as you're done with the hats, you go onto the glasses, and then the teeth, and then the bow tie. And when you get to the bow tie, you literally just flip them like right on top of each other. And so you've got to pay attention, like vertical stripes, horizontal stripes, vertical stripes, polka dot, and try to figure out which one wasn't there. It was pretty funny because I thought for sure I had nailed it, and then we revealed it, and I got one right. Amy, your wife, Larry, or Dan's wife, Amy, was making fun of me because the whole time she was like, slow down, you're flipping too fast. And I was like, no, it's got to be kind of fast or it's not hard enough. And then we got done. I was like, oh, yeah, I got this. Flip mine over. Totally wrong. And she won.
She won. Nice. That sounds like her kind of game. That looks like a lot of fun.
We pulled out the family-friendly easy ones, and she did. She had a good time.
Then you guys played Mariposas?
I did. Me and I taught Chantel how to play. She beat me by 1 point. And a two-player game is significantly different than a four-player game of that one. When you play the four players, you are... So this is the butterfly one we talked about in the last episode. If you haven't seen, or if you didn't hear that, go check it out and get the rundown. But we played a four-player game last week. This week, I just played the two. And you are very unlikely to uncover all of the tokens in this one to be able to reveal those cards that you're collecting. I think we literally flipped over three total tokens. And we're like halfway through the game. I was like, not going to make it. Just giving up on those. So scoring big on the goals was still a major point determiner. Chantel did get more butterflies back to Mexico than myself. And I think that is the game-winning strategy. You got to be able to get back.
I told her that.
And she listened.
Good job, Chantel. More. Congrats.
Yep. That was a fun one. That was a good one.
Melissa and I were able to play a couple games of Clank Adventuring Party, which is an expansion to the base game of Clank. This brings a couple things. One, it extends it so you can play with more players, but also it brings asymmetric players to the game, so you don't all start with the same deck of cards. You all start with a different set of cards and player powers.
Yes, so it was very interesting. So there's six of them because now it's up to six players, and I've played several of them now, and the decks are very different. Like the blue player, she is a kind of wizard or has magic. So she's collecting these tokens to be able to cast spells. And then there's an orc who gets benefits when he defeats monsters. Kevin has a favorite character.
Yeah, I played the monkey bot, and he basically wants to get damage. And as he does, he basically starts powering up his machine, and he uncovers different things, different items. Like he can basically every turn he automatically has a boot, or every turn he automatically has skill that he can use, which is pretty amazing because if he gets a lot of damage, he's got like six things that he can automatically do in his turn. So that was fun. And there's cards in his deck that let him heal. So not only is he taking damage and uncovering things, he is then healing himself of the damage he's taken.
Yeah. Another thing that the expansion brings is a new type of card to the big deck that you're going to have in the adventure row, and those are react cards. So they'll have a condition where if a player defeats a monster, or if a player walks into this type of room, or if a player takes this type of card, you can play the card from your hand if you have it in your hand and draw a new card, and then that the one that you played is still available in your play area for your turn, but it's a way to keep getting more cards into your deck and to be involved in other players' turns, paying attention to what they're doing because what they do may give you a benefit.
Jonah, Chantel, did I see that you guys got to try out the new expansion to Tapestry?
We sure did.
Give me the lowdown. I heard that maybe there were some mixed reviews.
Mixed review. Well, so
be honest. Give us the troops.
At this point, that I am the senior most person to give this review.
Okay,
because I played it a lot of times.
Oh well,
I played each one of the new civilizations.
There was quite a few in there.
I think it's in the video, but I think there's 8 or 10. I don't remember. But anyway, I played them all so I could make sure that I knew what I was talking about.
Awesome way to be thorough.
Okay, thank you. It adds some things to the game. So if you like Tapestry, then I definitely suggest getting the expansion because there's some things in the expansion that you should play each game of Tapestry with.
Mm.
Like it has little landmark tokens that you put on the landmarks around the board just to signify that they're either still there or not, which I thought was like, oh, that's no big deal. I don't need to, like, I paid for an expansion just to get landmark tokens, but then we played without landmark tokens, and like I would forget to get the landmarks.
Oh, okay.
Because it was just gray on the board, and like move past it and be like, oh, I forgot. I totally need that landmark that could have helped me, and I forgot. So like little things like that, and then there's also landmark cards. That's like an individual goal for each character during the game at some point too. So that's helpful to get a new landmark on your board, your capital city, and be able to fill that up to get resources and points and all things like that. So a couple of things like that, definitely I feel like, well, if I'm going to play Tapestry, I need those aspects. And there's some other things that I was hoping for that I didn't see.
Mm.
But overall, it's okay.
All right, yeah. Cool, good. And so you guys will have a review on the channel as well.
I sure will.
All right, cool. So be sure to check that out. You can see the pictures and get the lowdown on the details for the new Tapestry expansion. I think when I very first talked to you, you had only played it one time. And you were like, not sold. But sounds like maybe a little more experience made the difference.
I like the game. I like the game. So I think that after I gave it a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance, just like what it was bringing and really trying to get all of the civilizations played so I could see if they were really asymmetric and stuff like that, it grew on me a little bit.
Cool. Yep. Cool. And then what were you, Ryan, playing in this room?
Yeah. I was about to say Ryan, Katie and I, and Dan and Larry and Amy, Estrella, all played Small World of Warcraft, which is not quite out yet. So it was pretty cool being able to play the early release copy. It is essentially a reskinned Small World. So if you've played that, you're already ready to play. There are a few additional elements. I don't know if they're in any Small World expansions, because I know there are several Small World expansions. There's legendary places and artifacts that you kind of fight over, but they don't totally revolutionize the game. They are just like an additional thing to consider. A lot of the powers are very familiar from the original Small World, but they're just reskinned with new races. Mm-hmm. I think there are some new powers, but they aren't like devastating or super complicated or anything like that. The biggest thing that was a change for me, we'd played it previously with Larry earlier and just played the regular game. This time around, we played the team-based variant.
Real-time world.
Where,
yeah, it's real-time Small World that you played first now.
Yeah, yeah. The Pilses played the Horde, okay. So we were limited to only picking Horde races. The Estrellas picked the Alliance races, and Dan was neutral. And the thing about team variant is, if you have an odd number of people, one person is neutral. If you have an even number, you split them between Alliance and Horde. And whoever is on a team, their combined score is their end of game score is whoever has the lower value.
Ooh.
Of the two of them. So Dan won because he was neutral.
Didn't have anybody to share his points. Hold him down.
Yeah, Dan was devastating because he would walk out of the room, go, I don't know, actually spend time, quality time with his kids or something, and then come in.
Refreshed.
Take a 45-second turn, leave the room again. Meanwhile, we're like, oh, what do we need to do for points? And we just analysis paralysis all the way.
There was
the best decision?
There was definitely a time where I went out and I think I fed my youngest like half a banana and I was hanging out playing with him and I came back and I was like, oh, it's still Amy's turn. And she went right after me.
Oh, no.
So. Amy did get the most points total.
Oh, okay.
And I think this was her first time ever playing a small world game.
Oh, very nice.
So you got to give it to her. Like, she
Larry
she's
held
playing
her back.
Slow and steady.
Larry
got the most sure. points.
Larry yeah. held her back. It was poor like psychic
a,
Larry.
She had, I think, 75, and Larry was a good 20 points
Ooh,
off her.
He was 54. Ooch. I had 73, and Katie had 63. But you won with 67.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. you beat all of our lowers.
Yeah. I felt like it was interesting as a neutral player, and I don't know what it would be like if you guys really came after me hard. But yeah, like I kind of went into, there are three different islands that you play on. I went into the third island and I kind of just took it over and sat there for a few turns, got bonus points off of my race's power. And then by the time I switched to a new one, I went into the middle island and took that over while you guys fought over the side islands. And so I don't
just
know.
Hanging maybe, out under the radar, yeah. scooping up the points.
Yeah, the opportunity cost of denying you points versus getting 14 on my turn or whatever.
And there may have been some psychological aspects there because early on I did jump out to a big lead. I was getting 10 points on a turn and they were getting 6-7 points. Mm. But later it started to shift and so I was throwing it out there like, guys, I'm only getting like 6 or 7 points. You're getting 10-11.
He's very manipulative.
Way to go, Dad.
It worked.
That's the best way to play it.
That's right.
Now, you said islands. The small world that I played is just one board. So does this change that up?
Yeah, there's actually three different islands. Oh. Small, medium, and large. The base game version of this comes with two double-sided boards of each small, medium, and large. So there's several variations you can end up playing with.
Cool stuff. And then obviously World of Warcraft themed. I think, is Larry a fan? One of you guys were more of a fan of Warcraft, maybe not?
I think Larry had actually played it. I played Warcraft way back before World of Warcraft.
Before the world of?
My brother's really into WoW, but I never really got into it.
Oh, is that what they call it? WoW?
That's it.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
I learned something new every day.
I heard Larry really wanted to play the Pandaria race, but he was denied both games he's played so far.
Yeah, because that's considered a neutral race. So when you jump in, you kind of go with one side or the other. But then the neutral player gets four to choose from. And that was kind of nice, too, because I wasn't having to fight against you guys for what races. I had my choice of four, and I knew that nothing was going to take them away from me.
So I go for it, Ryan.
Yeah, and that was another interesting thing about the team was because they were separated out, there wasn't any of the paying, putting coins down on the races you were skipping for the better ones.
Yeah.
So people weren't benefiting from the ones you were skipping. You were just paying the bank. And then the races and powers, normally they come out together and they all shift down together. But because the powers are separate, they're a separate column from the three race columns, a power might be pulled out and then a different power step down.
So your combinations
join
were
in with that. So it was constantly changing, and you were kind of like, okay, I'm hoping this power will end up with this race so that I can swoop in and get it. It was an interesting variation on the game.
Cool. Sounds like a couple new dynamics in there. Pretty interesting stuff. The only other game that I played was Herd Mentality from Big Potato Games, and I think we might actually play that at the end of this episode.
Let's play it at the end of the episode.
So hang around for that. I think right now we can give a shout out to our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored in part by Bard Shark. They have a game currently on Kickstarter called Antimatter. This is a game for 3 to 6 players where you are commanding a unique crew of spacefarers trying to plunder, smuggle, gamble, and bluff your way to supremacy. This has a blend of Texas Hold'em, poker, and strategy in the game. Like I said, this you are a crew. And you have an asymmetric power, so you have different advantages over other players. And you'll be able to loot and play poker and things like that during the game. And players have the opportunity to get all that they want, but you have to try and get 4,000 credits first to win the game. And that is Antimatter. The graphic design is pretty cool looking. And the illustrations are pretty cool too. The game plays in about 45 minutes to about 2 hours, depending on a number of things, player count and stuff like that. But check out Antimatter if that sounds interesting to you from Bard Shark.
Let's roll from that into the news.
Today in the news, we have two items to discuss. Melissa.
Capstone Games has announced that they are publishing a game from designers Alexander Pfister and Arno Steinwender, and it's going to be co-published with Nanox Games, and this game is called Cloud Age, and it has been described in complexity as lighter than Great Western Trail and Maracaibo, but heavier than Isle of Skye, something like a Kennerspiel plus game. And in it, you are, there is this mysterious secret society cloud sabotaged countless oil production sites to destabilize the world. And that happened 15 years ago. And so there is an environmental catastrophe and distress. Disastrous effects on the entire planet, and you are traveling above this dried out landscape in your airships searching for a better life. So the box cover has this airship and kind of this post-apocalyptic desert-ish type of landscape. It says that the game has an innovative sleeving mechanism, and there is a immersive form of resource gathering. It sounds like there's also a campaign system with the game so that you can bring in new elements introduced as you play through different chapters, or you can also play standalone spin-off stories. And that is Cloud Age, and it's going to be coming from Capstone Games. Kevin?
Board and Dice just recently announced an abstract strategy game called Mandala Stones. In the game, there are two different actions you can take, and you choose one of the two actions, either picking or scoring. And this is sort of reminds me, it looks like abstract strategy. It looks like Azul-like. The colors are very bright, vibrant, and colorful. In the pick score, and for the pick action, you're going to choose an artist and move it to a different location on the board, then take all the adjacent stones that match the pattern of the artist you selected and are not adjacent to any other artists. And then you're going to collect those stones and gather them in towers on your player board, waiting to be scored on a future turn. And scoring, you're either going to score a color or score any top stones. And basically, you're going to be starting to stack these stones on top of each other. And like I said, it looks very vibrant and colorful and looks pretty cool from Board and Dice. They usually do a great job production value. And it looks like this game is going to be another big hit. So check out Mandala Stones coming probably next year from Board and Dice.
I just saw some preview pics of that, and it did look pretty cool. I was like, I want to touch it.
I know, right? Yeah, and the stones are like round-colored or round circular stones.
Yeah, like I want to skip them is what you want to do.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
They're
yeah.
like pastel colors, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, had a nice little scheme to it. Interesting stuff. Let's jump from here into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption!
This episode will be talking about four games coming to Kickstarter the week of August 31st, 2020. Kevin, start us off.
On August 31st, Peacekeeper Games launches an expansion to Rurik called Rurik Stone and Blade. This is a modular expansion to the game. And if you're not familiar with Rurik, it's an area control. It has some bidding, a really cool auction sort of programming board that's pretty cool in the game. But the expansion brings some new core content to the game. Some more variety to the rules itself. It gives more, brings more leaders and things like that, but also some new modules, three new modules, structures, where you have stables and taverns that you can build, and there's some other bigger structures that will be have some variability in the game as well, like capitals and sieges and things like that that people can buy but could affect other players. Or other players could affect those structures as well. Another module is Warfare, and that will help players attack more. The original Rurik, it really depended on the players, but the Warfare module will really help players attack each other a little bit more if you're into that. And then the third module is Rebel Factions, which is basically sort of not like neutral party, but there's rebels in the game, and this affects what they can and can't do in the game. And there's like this rebel camp that you're trying to basically take over. So defeat is the word I was looking for. So check out Rorik Stone and Blade from Peacekeeper Games on August 31st. Melissa.
On September 1st, Sinister Fish Games is bringing Streets to Kickstarter. This is for 1 to 5 players, plays in about 30 to 60 minutes. This is the same company that did Villagers, and the box looks very similar. It's white and is kind of rectangular but skinny. If you have Villagers, it's the same type of box, very similar art style as well. This is a tile placement set collection game where you are building a city with different buildings, and you're all building one collectively, so in the middle of the table. But the city is populated with hipsters, families, shoppers, and tourists, and these are represented by meeples that are, I'm not sure if they're screen printed or painted on, but they have a lot of personality to them. And when you place your buildings, they have different colors, and the appropriate type of person, meeple, is going to go to those buildings. And when you finish off a street, you're going to score all the buildings on that street. So any player who's played a building in that street will score, and you'll get more points for having certain types of people in those buildings and on that street, and then they move to other places. There's a lot of different ways to score. There's even a variant you can play with that gives you player powers and some more types of buildings. Kevin and I have a preview video of this. Well, actually, just Kevin, but I did play too. And it was really interesting figuring out where to place your buildings to maximize your points. And when a street is finished, all of the pink tourists are going to go to another pink building on an uncompleted street, and you want to own that building. So timing it so the people move to your stuff instead of other players' stuff is kind of interesting. That is Streets by Sinister Fish Games.
It sounds a little bit similar to Santa Monica, but maybe not. You're cooperatively building the town, is that correct?
It is. Everyone's building together. Together. You don't have your individual towns. It's one big city with lots of different streets.
Interesting.
On it. Yeah, I haven't played Santa Monica.
I was thinking that you hadn't. So yeah, it's the cooperative version, but not cooperative. Building the same town. I don't know.
So in Santa Monica, you're building your own
board. Yeah, your own beachfront.
Interesting.
Area, so. Cool stuff.
Yeah. So that's Streets. Dan, what are you looking at?
Coming September 3rd from Eagle Griffin Games is Mercado de Lisboa. It is a tile placement, area majority type influence game. It's economic, where you are placing tiles to try and get players to pay money, to get money from the stands that are in the market, and then you can open restaurants that are next to them, and that will improve their profit and hopefully bring in more customers. It's definitely set in a modern-day setting, so it'd be Lisboa today is kind of the idea. It's meant to be faster-paced, just pretty straightforward, easy to learn, but a lot of deep rules and abilities that let you really get in and think about it. They call it kind of a thinky filler game. It looks really pretty just looking at the board and the pieces. Very bright and vibrant board, good table presence. Looks like a lot of fun, like a good one to try. Again, that is Mercado de Lisboa from Eagle Griffin Games coming on September 3rd. Will, what are you looking at?
I'm looking at Philosophia Floating City coming from...
Floating World.
Better than just a city. Coming from Cogito Ergo Meeple Games. It's from designers Joseph and Madeline Adams. It is a 1-6 player deck building game that incorporates some pretty cool little twists to it. So not just cards. You've got a giant board. You will be acting as like... feudal Japanese warriors who are trying to accomplish a number of different things. The board has a shop where you can buy your cards, but it also has a shop where you can buy weapons. It has a place where you can face evil monsters. The board is also a map that you're traveling around trying to set up your different pagodas and different buildings. And so in the game, you will be drafting your six cards like normal, but you will then pass the cards to the player on your right, who will discard one, and then I split, you choose the cards for you, so they hand them back to you. You have to either play like the three cards or two cards that they've split it into, and you're going to be using the icons on the cards just like you would in a standard deck builder. And then you'll be gaining money, gaining these sand timer tokens that you'll place on your individual player board so that at the end of your turn, you can take additional actions. There's just a lot of stuff going on, but I didn't feel like it was overwhelming in any way. It actually felt like a really great, when I go back and play some of the first deck builders that I ever played, it's almost like so mathy and so fast that I'm just like, draw, play, done, reshuffle. And there's almost like a little too little to those games, even with the 100 deck expansions. This game really added some neat stuff to it, and one of the things I typically don't do in a deck builder is pay very much attention to my neighbors. I'm usually just trying to optimize my deck as much as I possibly can. In this game, you have to kind of pay attention. Oh, Sarah is trying to collect the building tokens in order to build this new building. I've got to not give her those cards. That's the one that's getting discarded, so that she can't achieve the mission that she's trying to do. So it made you watch everybody else on the board. There's also a couple different ways to win. You've got to collect enough tokens to finish the game, or at the beginning of the game, you actually get two secret hidden location tokens. One is your like actual secret dojo, and the other one is a
decoy
one that you're trying to throw people off with. And if you can determine the other player's secret location by taking actions to look at tokens or narrowing it down, then you can win with fewer overall missions accomplished at the end of the game.
So would you say this is more like Dominion with a set market and everyone's getting the same thing, or more like maybe a Clank or Ascension type thing where the market kind of changes?
None.
Like that at all.
Okay.
It is like Dominion. I mean, no, not like Dominion, more like Clank. The cards that come out into the market rotate pretty much every round, so they're different for sure. It's not, you're not optimizing your deck, but you are trying to kind of build towards a very specific goal. So the cards that you're buying, you're trying to get the ones that have those specific tokens on it so that you can get to them.
And the part Will didn't explain is all of this is it is simultaneous.
Oh, okay.
Neat. So you obviously do the draw phase at the same time and pass the cards around. But then when you collect your items and take your actions, that's also simultaneous. Hmm. And so there's an influence track. And if you are at the top of the track, if you go to do an action and somebody else is trying to do the same one, like you're trying to buy cards of a certain type of card, then whoever is higher on the influence track gets first choice.
That's pretty cool.
So that's a whole nother twist. It doesn't come into play as much on a two-player game, but on a six-player game, it would come into play quite a bit.
It would actually be crazy. We haven't played it at very many higher player counts.
Yeah, we received a prototype of just a two- and three-player board, so they didn't send us the full six-player.
Yeah, the board is two-sided, so the other side is for six players. But I can't actually fathom how you would take your turn simultaneously with six different orders. Like, I'm going to buy a card. Does anybody want this card? Like, any of the five people in front of me?
You just take it, and then if somebody else...
Is that how you play it?
Yeah, if somebody else wants to jump in, like, they would have to either have higher influence, or you can spend your influence and go down on the track to be the one to take the action first.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the final prototype... we obviously were playing with a prototype. It'll be interesting to see what the final version looks like. It had some minis in it. Your pagodas are pretty neat.
It has historic artwork from the time period that they've remastered as well. So they have, and the couple that designed this live in Japan and have studied a lot of this out. So culturally, it's very sound as well.
We're going to jump into a house guest segment with comedian Grant Lyon. Welcome to the house.
Hey!
Hey, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah,
you
Grant.
Guys are real fun.
Well, yeah. We're glad we can have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, I am a comedian. I've been a comedian for 15 years. You know, I've been on Comedy Central. I'm currently starring in the movie Killer Kate on Amazon Prime, bunch of other stuff. But I also love board games. And I've been really deep diving into those for the last couple of years. And I love the community. I love the activity, all of it, you know?
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, we, you know, we specialize in board game content, and it seems like you've been dipping your toe into creating your own board game content. Tell me a little bit about how that started.
Yeah. So, you know, I've loved board games. I think with a lot of people, like Code Names or Exploding Kittens or things like that were kind of their gateway into the hobby. So I started playing those like 5 years ago and having game nights with other comedians and things like that. And then my buddy asked me, he has a couple of published games, and he asked me if I wanted to work on a fun game with him. And I was like, oh, sure. Yeah, I've never thought about doing that. All right. and so we started working on this game. And then he was like, hey, we should go to like Origins. We should go to Gen Con. And I was like, what are those? Like that? What? And
what are board game conventions, right?
Yeah. And I was like, there's whole conventions for this? That's crazy. Like, I had no idea. And then, you know, I'm thinking like, what is it, like a few hundred people there, you know, just hanging out, playing games or something like that. And so like the first one I went to was the New York Toy Fair, which is huge.
Yeah, Toy Fair probably be like super big and board games like a subset of that. But yeah, so you went to New York Toy Fair. Awesome.
Yeah, probably in like 2017, 2018. I can't remember. It was like a few years ago. And I was like, oh, this is a thing. All right. Okay. I like it, you know? And then, you know, I've kept playing and kept getting, you know, more and more into games, and my library's gotten bigger and bigger. And then really it was the pandemic. You know, I perform, you know, 300 nights a year normally, that sort of stuff. And I'm traveling half the time. And when the pandemic first started and, you know, everything shut down, my career kind of, you know, got put on pause overnight, right? No audiences.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, but it has been like a blessing in disguise, because it's an opportunity to like really think about, you know, and reflect of like, well, what really makes me happy? What do I really like doing? And I'm someone that like can't help but be creative. Like, I have to be creative. It's in my bones, you know? And so when we were just sitting around, I live with three other comedians as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have a fun house. We call it the dad pad. We don't have any kids, but we're just a bunch of dudes that have entered the dad phase of our lives. So,
okay.
You know, cool. Yeah, just a lot of like, dad noises when we're standing up and that sort of thing.
Gotcha. You
know, a lot of running away from our feelings, you know dad stuff. and so, you know, that first month when none of us were doing shows and we really weren't even leaving the house at all, we were just playing games all day, every day. I mean, that was like what was getting us through it. And I thought, well, you know, like a lot of my friends, a lot of my followers aren't people that know games that well. I should just start like a series. And originally I was like, I'm just going to like be making these videos to tell my friends like what games they should be playing, because it's really helping me get through this tough time, and maybe I can help other people get through this time. I mean, that was literally my impetus for it, was just like, I just want to help other people find some games that they might enjoy playing with their family and friends and help them get this through this tough time right now.
So you're calling your segment Grant's Game Recs, which is good. Yeah. And it looks like they're pretty short little recommendation videos, but you put your own little spin on it. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, the idea was, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, I watch your videos. I watch Dice Tower's videos. I watch It Played. All of you guys are doing such a great job on going on a deeper dive into these games. And those are the, like, yours are the videos I watch when I'm like, do I want to buy this game or not? You know? Sure. But I thought, well, nobody's really doing these short videos. And I want to be like a place where you come and you look, okay, I'm going to watch like 90-second videos on a bunch of different games. And I'm not going to buy a game after watching a video, but maybe I've got like a list of a few that I want to check more about, and then I can go somewhere else and watch a longer video of them. So I wanted to do something that, like, I didn't feel was really being done, which is just these short, punchy videos, just kind of an introduction to a bunch of different games. And then, obviously, being a comedian, I try to make them funny and entertaining and all that stuff. It's an opportunity for me to put some jokes in there, since I don't have any stages to perform on right now.
Well, it's a great little medium you can use. So I just actually watched your Hanabi one, your most recent one.
Oh, and, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I love the little ending about the fireworks. And did you take like a segment from like a previous show that you had recorded and then put that there at the end of the video?
Okay. That's actually from my album that came out earlier this year. And, you know, it just felt like a fun way to like have some voice over the end card. Right. I want to give it some life. And, you know, that's my unique take on this stuff is I'm not coming to board games as like a hardcore gamer. I'm coming to board games as like a comedian that just wants to have fun with my friends, you know?
Yeah, so it seems like you enjoy all types of games. I see that you have code names on there and Potion Explosion. What games do you sort of feel yourself drawn to?
Games that have a lot of social interaction are like my favorite, just because, you know, to me, the point of games is to have fun. And there are times where I want to like sit down and have a real thinking session. But most of the time, I just want to like have fun with my friends, right? You know, my favorite games of all time are probably things like Sheriff of Nottingham or Bang Dice or things like that, because there's just so much social interaction around that. And, you know, again, most of the people that are coming to me for games are not like, they don't know that much. They're where I was at a few years ago, where it's like, you know, we've moved on from Monopoly and Scrabble. We know that there's things other than that.
Yeah, and, right?
Yeah.
They still don't know that there's other games other than Monopoly and Scrabble, but there are, and they're amazing.
And that's like the big thing for me is that, like, you know, whenever I talk to someone that says, I don't like games, I'm like, no. You don't like games because the last time you played a game was 15 years ago and somebody, you were playing Monopoly and it took 6 hours and you didn't even finish the game and someone flipped the table over and got mad at you.
Right.
But that's not games anymore, you know, like that's not. And so that hopefully I can like be like a bit of a gateway to be like, look, I think there's a game out there for everybody. I legitimately think there is a game that every single person, no matter who they are, where they come from, any of that stuff, they are going to love. They just got to find it, you know?
Have you ever played Don't Mess with Cthulhu?
No, I haven't. Ooh.
All right. Since you like these social interaction games, look up Don't Mess with Cthulhu. Play it with your dad, Pad. I think you guys will have an honestly great time. It has a social deduction aspect to it. And it's one of our favorites. We'd like to pull it out late at night, and it's pretty cool. So check out. Don't mess with. Hey, you know, you're Grant's Game Rex, and you know, Tantrum House. We have to give you some recommendations too.
I am looking for that. I mean, that's the crazy thing. It's like I've been so into it for now a couple of years, and I'm like, I've just scratched the surface. You know, there's just so much. But I love recommendations. So thank you.
Hey, no problem. I noticed that you have the Sherlock Holmes consulting detective. That's one of my wife and ours like favorite games to, you know, cooperatively work together. The working it out in your mind and trying to figure out, can I beat Holmes, or, you know, the different paths you could take are so fun to do.
Wait, have you ever actually beaten Holmes, though?
No.
I really enjoy that game, and it's like a real, you know, that game has some good social interaction where you're like trying to figure out, but man, it makes me feel dumb at the end, right? Like, I'm somebody that I'm like, I think I'm like decently clever and smart, and I'm like, okay, oh man, we did that in 14 moves. That feels pretty good. And then you get to the end, and Sherlock Holmes is like, oh, that's cute. I did it in 6. You took 14. I did it in 6.
Yeah, yeah. I find it an accomplishment if I figured out the mystery.
Yeah, totally, totally.
So there's other Sherlock Holmes consulting detectives out there. There's 3 that are already available. in that line. And there's a new one that's just releasing called the Baker Street Irregulars. And that just showed up on our doorstep. So looking forward to pulling that out. That's what sort of caught my eye.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite games of like all time?
Oh man, I mean, I always go back to the classics, like Ticket. I call them classics now, but like, you know, Ticket to Ride and Dominion. I love deck building games and things like that. Time Stories. I'm not sure if you've ever played.
I don't know Time Stories. No.
Time Stories are a little interesting because they're sort of one-off games where you are adventurers and you're sort of going into this time capsule, but you're not traveling through time. You are basically embodying someone in a different life and you're controlling their body. And it's a lot of very mystery, lots of mystery things going on. And you're trying to figure out the mystery. So there's a base game and they have a lot of like expansion add-ons. So
I like a good body switch, you know? Come on. Who can't get behind 13 going on 30? You know what I mean?
There's some quantum leap going in on there. So
all right. I like it.
So yeah, I like co-op games and adventure games and story, story games. I'm a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. There's a new Journeys in Middle Earth where you are, basically traveling through the different, you know, Middle Earth scenarios. It's not really it's based off the books, but it's not like you're going through the movies or the books or anything like that. But it has that sort of feel to it. You're doing, you're Gandalf, you're Aragorn, you know, you're a team and you're going through and you're trying to fight the bad guys and stuff like that. It's actually app based. So the app will lead you through, you know, what terrain is out there and things like that and what you're trying to accomplish. So
cool. Have you read the Kingkiller Chronicles, Patrick Rothfuss's books?
I have not.
Those are, if you like Lord of the Rings, read this series. And it's The Name of the Wind and The Wise Man's Fear. And we're still waiting on the third book. But they're so, so great. And that's one that I'm like, man, somebody better make this into a board game. It's not me. I'm not talented enough to do that. But somebody needs to make this into a board game because it would be dope.
So some recent books that we've read here, the Way of Kings series, and then the Wheel of Time, which I'm not sure if you've heard of, but it's like a 14 volume sort of Lord of the Rings esque. And I'm in volume 7 right now out of 14, and each one's about 700 to 900 pages.
Oh, yeah. How do you have any time for games reading those books?
Right. It's basically right before bed. I'm just reading, like, you know, a good 30 pages and just pushing through. So.
That's great.
Cool. So hopefully you'll get back out and you'll do some more comedy work. In the near future. I'm not sure when that will be, but hopefully you can with some spatial distancing involved or something like that.
Well, and eventually my long-term plan is, I think it would be really cool. You know, now board game cafes exist in almost every major city, and even non-major cities have them now. And I've been thinking about putting a comedy tour at board game cafes.
Man, it's a great intersection. That's perfect.
Totally. I don't think it's ever been done before. So I think it would be really fun. You know, and it's like you do a show for an hour and then you play games with people there and stuff like that. You know, you stay and you know, and I can talk about board games in my show and then also, you know, have jokes about other things. So I'm excited about the idea.
I'm sure in the last few months you've gotten some good material written down for the future, for future comedy.
For sure. How could you not?
Could you not? That's cool. Great. Yeah. It's been great having you on the show here. Audience, listen, or you can find Grant on his our YouTube channel, Grant Lyon, LYON. Where else can they find you, Grant?
I mean, I'm also on Instagram, Grant Lyon 1, Twitter, Grant Lyon 1. I got the Grant Lyon on YouTube, but the other one, some other jerk took my name first, so I got the one on there.
But you're number one, so that's good.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I went with that. And then you could always, like, my website links to everything. It's just grantlyon.com.
Very good. Well, once again, thanks, Grant. And when you're in South Carolina, look us up. We'd love to meet you.
Yeah, please. I'd love to. I'll give you tickets to a show, hopefully, when I'm out there. Yeah, thanks for having me. Keep up the good work. I love your stuff.
All right. You too, Grant. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
It's great having a fun guest on the show, Grant, and glad that he's able to use his creative abilities in unique ways since he's not able to do his regular comedy act out and travel like he does. So good to see him branching out and doing some board game reviews in a unique format and throwing some comedy in there. So always good to have a good laugh.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Like if it takes off for him and turns into a thing. I always, you know, there's a couple people in our industry who are legitimately funny. Not very many of them. And I hope he makes it a go of it. I think that'd be really awesome.
I forgot to ask him, but if you watch some of his, like, if you watch some of his videos, his beard keeps getting longer.
Oh, he's just going to let it go forever?
And longer. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I wonder how long he'll let it go.
Maybe the thing. All right, so I think we're going to wrap up the show by playing a game together. Are you guys ready for this? A couple of us got to play earlier this evening. It's called Herd Mentality from Big Potato Games. It's got a pink cow in it. I think that's the important thing of note in the game.
Bessie.
Yeah, that's right. And in the game, you are trying to we're all going to try to get on the same page. So in the real game, everybody would write down their answers on a sheet of paper. And if you are among the herd and you are answer in the majority, you'll score a point. If you don't score with the majority, if you don't answer with the majority, you will gain no points. And if you are the lone wolf, lone cow, I don't know what you are in this game, and you write an answer that nobody else wrote, then you get the pink cow. And if you have the pink cow at the end of the game, you lose. Funny story, poor Valerie. Second place the whole game. Jonah passed off the cow on the last turn.
Sure did.
Sure did. All right, I'm going to read the question. You at home answer along with us, and we'll answer on at the same time or something. I don't know, because we're not writing it down. Here we go. Random questions such as, you're wearing a brand new white shirt. What meal should you definitely avoid?
3, 2, 1.
Spaghettios.
All right, how many barbecues do we have? I heard a couple. Me and Ryan. That's all? Come on, people. Yeah.
Barbecue. Spaghetti.
Come on,
spaghetti.
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 Oh, what did Kevin say?
Sloppy Joe's.
Sloppy Joe's.
Kevin, give me the pink cow.
Okay, let's bust it out. But, I wish it, like, squeaked or something.
Right, but Sloppy Joe's was
or maybe mood?
That would make sense. It's not a pig. All right, Kevin's. That's a point for the spaghetti people. Spaghetti.
Just the spaghetti people get a point.
I appreciate you.
Yes, there were 4 spaghettis.
Being on the barbecue train. Next question.
It's because of my country heritage. No,
What's the best flavor of crisps? I don't know what crisps are.
They're potato chips.
I think this game. In Britain. Judging, is that how you spell flavor in America?
It is not. Okay. It's the British.
So playing a British game here. And of chips, too.
We're doing chips. All right.
Flavor.
What's the best flavor of chips? I think we got this. You're right. Come on. Come on. What? All right. 1, 2, 3.
Barbecue.
Did you say barbecue, right?
No, I said barbecue.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah, Jonah. All right. Kevin's on board with the barbecue train.
I said nacho because I really like Doritos.
I said cheddar.
Cheddar.
Any cheese flavor.
No one gets the cow because no one was by themselves.
Right. I'm not even sure the barbecue is the best. I just felt like that was the safe answer.
Yeah, exactly. That was the answer to get a point in the game.
Sour cream and onion was my second.
I was about to say sour cream and onion.
Barbecue is actually the one flavor I don't like.
Ah.
Because it doesn't taste like barbecue.
Did you say barbecue, though?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I was like, come on, Ryan, we got this. And then didn't get it.
All right, next.
Next question. This is a tough one. This might take some thought.
You keep taking tough ones.
Would you rather talk like Yoda or Darth Vader?
All right.
This is a tough one. All right. I think I'm ready. Everyone else ready?
Count it down.
3, 2, 1.
Darth Vader.
Dude, do we do it? Everybody?
I said Yoda.
Here is the pink cow, Melissa.
I don't think I can handle the wheezing.
I could not understand myself if I was talking Yoda. I was like,
at least other people would understand me if I talk like Darth Vader. Yoda's probably wiser. I wish I was as smart as Yoda, but Darth Vader voice all the way.
All right,
next one. If you had to choose, on which part of your body would you let a wasp sting you?
What? Why is this a question?
Right,
Jonah? You got this from earlier tonight.
Wait, was cheating happening? All right, I'm ready. Nobody else will say this, but this is the best place. I'm confident.
All right, go for it.
All right, you ready? 3, 2, 1.
Parms.
Did
Did Ryan, did you say arm?
I said arm.
I also said arm.
Three right. arms.
I said elbow. Is that close elbow? Enough to arm?
Ooh, I said butt. I don't know.
But. I did not say butt. I said nose.
Which is the opposite, which was the answer earlier you should have said.
I was really thinking hand, though.
Hand is what I said. I said palm. If you get stuck on the palm, you can't feel it as much. It's the hardest part of your skin. Hand
at first, but I was like, that's too long.
If I had to choose, I think right on the skin.
Ooh, right between there? Between the thumb and
thumb and your first finger. What about your
gluteus maximus? You're not going to feel a thing back there.
For sure you will.
Every time you sit down.
You sit? No way.
Let me tell you, the worst place to be stung is on the side of your head above your ear, which happened to me last year, and it swelled up like crazy.
Well, this wasn't even just a wasp sting. This was one of those European hornets. That welt was
it a murder hornet?
It was not a murder hornet.
We didn't know they were murder hornets back then.
No,
but.
We had a whole hive living out in the backyard, and Will attempted to take them down.
All right, next question. I don't know what the answer to this is, but I want to know everybody's opinions. What is the best ride at the carnival?
Okay,
all right. Yeah, not specifically Cedar Point, although that is the best place
that's
to
not
ride.
A carnival, rides. That's an amusement park.
Carnival's different.
Carnival.
I understand.
A ride at the carnival.
Carnival is one of those traveling things that are like super dangerous.
And basically, everything spins you around in circles.
Right.
And everything's wooden and is rickety. That's where you have the
or
most
metal
fun.
And rusty. Yeah. All right,
I
I'm
just
ready.
Got back from the Wyoming State Fair. So
did you?
Ideas.
Oh, okay. I can't wait to hear these.
Three,
all right.
Two, one.
The
Ferris wheel.
Do you actually think it's the best, or is that just the only ride you can think of at the carnival?
It's the one that doesn't make me sick.
It's the only one Katie wanted to go on.
Okay.
What are some of your other answers?
Yeah, what'd you say, Melissa?
I actually didn't say anything because I can't remember the name of it. It's the one that it's like the long seat.
The boat?
No, not the boat.
I said the boat.
Yeah,
not
there's
the
always
boat.
The long
boat. Oh, does it spin you around?
The boat is where I'm
like,
at. That's
yeah,
the best
it spins
one.
You around and you just kind of slide to the edges.
But
there's
yeah,
usually only like two people in each.
There's like two.
There's like eight pods together.
There's the teacups, which is basically the same thing.
So not quite that space.
The egg scrambler or something like that.
The salt and pepper shaker.
See, nothing that turned you upside down, and I'd rather not be really high either.
What did Jonah say? What was your favorite?
I said Ferris wheel. But in real life, if there's like a roller coaster that's like wooden, I'm going
at
on
the
that.
Carnival?
Yeah, for sure. I'm going on that every
time. Oh, King's Dominion, do they still have the one in Virginia? Do they still have the Grizzly? That was
the Beast is where it's at, King's Dominion.
A wooden roller coaster.
So I actually lived and went to school like 5 minutes from there and never went to King's Dominion, which was a mistake.
I don't think
Grizzly sounds great.
I don't think I'd ever get on a roller coaster that was routinely dismantled and reassembled, though. That just scares me.
You got to live life on the edge.
Right?
Well,
you only live once.
You have to bring the one that we played, brought out earlier about the animal.
Okay, I might have it on top. I got one more that I think we can all get right. What is the best fast food restaurant? 3, 2, 1.
Chick-fil-A! What about Tropical Grill?
Ooh, that's a good point. That's tough.
That's not a chain.
Quicker.
Is food. It food?
It's quicker.
It's food. Faster than Chick-fil-A sometimes.
No, you can't
but
say that.
But better quality.
I can say that.
But Chick-fil-A I think Chick-fil-A was the right answer. That was the right answer.
Sometimes I walk into Tropical Grill and they already have my stuff ready for me.
It doesn't that's count crazy. If they know your name. It's like not fair. It's a different level. All right, final question for Kevin. Which British wild animal would make the coolest pet?
First of all,
I'm keeping my answer that I said earlier.
Are you? Okay, good. Yes. Good
I got
good.
An answer. 100%.
What?
British
wild animal.
British
first,
wild
first
animal.
Of all, okay. It's a wild animal that's coolest for a pet. All right, you got that. Then you throw the word British in there.
I don't know what it means. I don't know.
Okay, I got
three,
one.
3, 2, 1.
Owl.
Falcon.
Peregrine Falcon.
Are those there? I don't know.
Ryan?
I said owl.
Owl? 2 points.
Like,
we said owl.
I don't
owl.
Even know what's in Brit.
I said owl. Got it. Is that the
Harry
only
Potter
duplicate?
Once,
exactly.
So. I said a bunny, like a rabbit.
A bunny.
I'm sure that
that's
they have rabbits.
A wild animal.
Owls we have
I think
wild
technically it is a wild
in
animal.
In our backyard. It technically is.
But are they British?
Bugs
the
Bunny
ones
with
in
a British
Britain
accent.
Are.
Dan, what'd you say?
I couldn't think of anything. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I thought of the coolest thing. Come on.
You Sarah did. Wins. Here's the pink cow.
Oh, owl for the win. We duplicated it. All right. Cool. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Hope you had a blast. Hope you were able to play along and that you weren't alone, but that you were with the herd. Thank you guys so much. Catch you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.